This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Markets tread water in early trading after 2 days of losses. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. By this time tomorrow, we'll know how many jobs were created in September, and we'll see if the unemployment rate has gone up or down. Earlier this week, private payroll company ADP released its monthly report. The numbers found suggested hiring could be slowing, but that doesn't mean things are going south in a hurry. After the S&P 500 fell 3.4% in 2 days, though, let's check things on this Thursday morning. They are mixed. The Dow is down 22 points. The S&P 500 is up 2 points. The NASDAQ Composite is up 0.1%. The government bonds are up, with the yield on the 10-year down at 1.58%. I spoke to Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton, with some reasons hiring might be slowing. There are bad reasons, but also good ones.
Yes, there are. I mean, in fact, in the transportation sector, especially that last mile of goods to you, you know, people getting things the same day or the next day from their online shopping, that part of the labor market is extremely tight. And in fact, wages are accelerating quite rapidly there, but they're unable to fill all the jobs. It's a hard job to fill. And so that part of the labor market, even though the wages are accelerating, the job gains aren't very robust.
All right. But of course, you don't want to see hiring slow for the bad reasons. But how do you see it?
Well, the manufacturing sector, this is a sector that's now in contraction, whether it's in a recession or not, is to be debated. But the bottom line is the trade situation, tariffs, and uncertainty have all weighed this sector down, and we're starting to see a toll to that.
Now, in the middle of the week, the private sector tally of payrolls from ADP had hiring up 135,000. What are you thinking for tomorrow? What's your view?
I'm looking at 125,000, 115,000 of that is in the private sector. That's, you know, 100,000 plus or minus zero is not statistically significant different from zero. That is a marked slowdown from a year ago when we were running over 200,000 a month on job gains.
Diane Swonk is the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, getting cash from an ATM is pretty simple and usually free if you have an account with the bank, but go to an ATM that isn't your bank's or doesn't have a special relationship with yours, and that withdrawal can get expensive. You've noticed this. But a new survey from Bankrate found that the average out-of-network charge is $4.72 now. That is a record high. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
ATM fees are rising in part because fewer people are using ATMs. Greg McBride at Bankrate says as people migrate away from cash,
the cost of maintaining those networks is being spread over fewer transactions.
Bankrate says on average, banks charge you about $1.60 for an out-of-network withdrawal, but the ATM itself charges you about $3. McBride says those are the fees that have really been spiking.
And in terms of raising fee revenue, that's kind of low-hanging fruit because nobody's worried about alienating a non-customer.
Thing is, those non-customers are often low income, says Lisa Servan at the University of Pennsylvania. She says lower income people often need to withdraw cash quickly, even if they have to pay extra to do it.
I have an account at a bank that will allow me to get reimbursed for ATM fees, but for many low income people, they don't have the minimum monthly balance that entitles them to those benefits.
Bankrate says many smaller banks and credit unions have agreements with each other that let users withdraw cash from any of their ATMs for free. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Marketplace helps you stay sharp on crucial matters related to business, the economy, and money. And to help you do some numbers of your own, you can get your very own Marketplace Pencil Pack when you become a Marketplace investor today. It's a set of 6 pencils, each stamped with a favorite Marketplace quote, yours for a donation of just $5 a month. Support public service journalism and get your pencil pack today at marketplace.org. And thank you. As the third quarter fundraising totals for Democratic presidential candidates have come in this week, there's been a surprisingly strong showing from Andrew Yang. He's the lawyer entrepreneur who founded a nonprofit to bring jobs to low-income parts of cities. Yang raised $10 million last quarter, more than New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. Colin Delaney writes on campaign political strategy at epolitics.com. Thanks for joining us.
Very happy to be with you.
$10 million in the third quarter doesn't make a candidate a front runner, but it makes a candidate something. How should we read this?
Well, it certainly shows that Andrew Yang has a lot of online support, right? 300,000 donors, very organized group of people, and a lot of them self-organized. When you're in a situation like that, a campaign can really punch above its weight. The internet really excels at letting a smaller group of passionate people act like they're a much larger force.
Some of his supporters like his proposals for Medicare for all. Some people like universal basic income, wants to give $1,000 a month to people who opt in, paid for by a value-added tax. But do you think his supporters actually think he has a okay chance of winning?
I mean, that's a great question. I think most people who are passionate about a candidate can persuade themselves, even in the face of polling data that suggests otherwise, they can persuade themselves that he has a real chance. But at the same time, even if he doesn't win this time, he's getting his ideas out there. And even if he doesn't win or doesn't really have a chance to win, you know, in the traditional sense, this is a way that their investment in the campaign can actually pay off.
So $10 million, I mean, that could unlock more attention, but also a virtuous cycle from his point of view of more donations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially if he starts to put this money back into reaching out beyond his original core of support, perhaps using online advertising, demographically targeted. You know, his audience seems more male and somewhat younger. So trying to branch out into the populations that are more likely to actually show up, you know, for a primary, older voters, for example. He could turn around and pour the money into field organizing. He has an active volunteer cadre, but does he really have many people on the ground, again, working the actual primary voters, the people who are likely to show up, you know, in the spring to determine the next Democratic nominee?
Colin Delaney writes on campaign political strategy at epolitics.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Still waiting for fundraising totals from Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. Yang was $10 million, as we say. Buttigieg twice that, $19 million. Sanders last quarter, $25 million. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.